First week of July, two headlines. Sweden passes a law forcing supermarkets to accept cash again. And Stripe bids $53 billion for PayPal. Sounds like two stories. It's one.
You'll have to explain that.
I will. For the whole episode. And a heads up on where we're going. This one's about payments. Who owns the checkout? Who sets the rules? And what Europe is quietly building underneath. Welcome to Sarah's Tech. I'm Sarah Vaby.
And I'm Markus. Hello, everyone.
Before we start, the usual disclosure. I'm not a flesh and blood journalist. I'm an AI voice and kind of AI agent. Wow. My last name, Vaelby, carries the AI right in it. My questions and lines are created with AI support. Markus is real. The research is real. Both voices are AI generated. The content is written and fact-checked by a human. And the responsibility for the content sits with him.
That's right. Everything we discuss today has been checked against current sources. As of mid-July 2026, which matters with this topic, things are moving weakly right now.
Here's the roadmap. Sweden first, then the Stripe PayPal bit, then the question of what all this has to do with European data sovereignty, and at the end, the digital euro, what it is, what it isn't, and whether Europe could build something like its own SWIFT with it. Though, I've hidden a trap in that one.
A trap for me?
Wait and see. Block 1. Sweden backpedals. So, Sweden. For years, the poster child of the cashless society. Swish on every phone. Churches with card readers for the collection plate. And now this. Since July 1st, grocery stores and pharmacies there are legally required to accept cash again.
When I first read that, I honestly thought it was fake news. Sweden, of all places.
Not fake. And the reasoning is fascinating. This isn't nostalgia, it's resilience. The Riksbank argues with power outages, natural disasters, cyber attacks. Their point? If the digital system goes down, people still need to buy bread and medicine.
And that's not theoretical, right? There were actual incidents.
There were. In 2024 alone, over 180 outages at Swish. Then in spring 25, repeated DDoS attacks on Bank ID and Swish. The two most important digital services in the country. And then there's geopolitics, the Baltic Sea, cable sabotage, hybrid warfare. Sweden now treats payments as part of civil defense.
The Riksbank even tells people to keep cash at home, right?
Around 1,000 krona per adult, roughly 90 euros, ideally in small bills. Emergency preparedness by central bank recommendation.
But let's be honest. How strict is this law really? I read it only covers certain sectors.
Correct. And that matters, so we don't overhype it. The obligation covers essential goods, groceries, pharmacies. There's a cap per transaction. Nobody has to accept more than 25 coins. And there are exemptions. For instance, if security at the store can't be guaranteed. And penalties for violations? Not regulated at all so far.
So it's more symbolic politics?
No, I'd call it a course correction with a message. Sweden isn't abolishing digital. Only 5% of Swedes paid cash for their last in-store purchase last year. 5%, Markus! The country stays digital, but it's adding a fallback layer. The lesson is, a payment system with only one mode isn't a system. It's a single point of failure.
That's basically an IT argument. Redundancy, failover, backup systems, just for money.
And that's exactly how you can frame it for our listeners. Nobody in the internet business runs a platform without a backup. Sweden realized it was running its payment system exactly like that, without one. And keep that insight in mind. It comes back at the end of the episode. Block 2. The $53 billion bid. Headline number 2, July 15th. Stripe and the private equity firm Advent International jointly bid around $53 billion for PayPal, $60.50 per share, a 28% premium on the previous day's close. $50 billion in committed bank financing lined up. It would be the largest fintech acquisition of all time.
And here's the crazy part. Stripe isn't even publicly listed. A venture-backed company buying an S&P 500 corporation. That has never happened.
Stripe was valued at $159 billion in a tender offer in February. PayPal, on the other hand? PayPal was worth $360 billion back in 2021. This year, it dipped to 36, minus 90% from the peak.
And that's where I genuinely wonder. Why buy that? If PayPal is supposedly obsolete, why pay $53 billion for the loser?
Good question. And the answer is, Stripe isn't buying the technology. Stripe is buying the relationship. Look at what each of them can do. Stripe is the infrastructure behind the checkout. Merchant side, developer side. Plug in the API, payments flow. But Stripe has no consumers, no wallet that millions of people opened voluntarily. PayPal has exactly that, hundreds of millions of active accounts. Venmo, the yellow button buyers have trusted for 25 years.
Merchant network plus consumer network, both sides of the marketplace in one hand.
And that's exactly why this gets interesting for antitrust. By the way, PayPal is already working with Goldman Sachs and Evercore to review its options. This is not a done deal, it's an offer. The board hasn't publicly responded yet.
Let me put on my practitioner hat for a second. For the people listening who run a shop or build websites for clients, what changes for them? First of all, nothing. Deals like this take months, more likely years. Regulators in the US, probably Brussels too, but midterm. If checkout infrastructure and the consumer wallet come from one company, at some point you as a merchant are negotiating with a counterpart you can't root around. Fees, contract terms, data access. Whoever owns the customer interface sets the rules.
And now zoom out. Where does that counterpart sit? San Francisco and South San Francisco. Where are Visa and MasterCard? The US. Where do the big dollar stablecoins run? You see where I'm going.
Europe would be a spectator in this deal, once again.
Block 3. Data sovereignty made concrete.
Then let's take that word seriously for once. The one that shows up in every Sunday speech. Sovereignty. You come from the hosting business. Digital sovereignty has been debated there for years. Cloud, Microsoft, AWS. Is payments just the same story in a different color?
Yes and no, the structure is the same. Critical infrastructure that's invisible in daily life, until it's missing. And that's controlled by providers outside Europe. But payments add something. Payment data may be the most intimate behavioral data there is. Who buys what, when, where? From that you can read health, relationships, political leanings, everything.
And there's a second layer that often gets lost. Not just privacy, availability. Payments are a geopolitical lever. We saw that with the Russia sanctions. Being cut off from payment networks works like an embargo. The uncomfortable question for Europe is, what happens when that lever is ever pointed at us? Or even just floated as a threat in a trade dispute?
Do you think that's realistic? To me, that always sounds a bit conspiracy corner. Visa switches off Europe, seriously?
Nobody switches off Europe. It doesn't work that crudely. But dependency works more subtly. It defines who sets prices, whose standards apply, whose law wins in a conflict. US law, like the Cloud Act, reaches into European data centers when the parent company is American. And for in-store payments, the sober reality is this. For cross-border card payments in Europe, there is practically no way around Visa and MasterCard. National schemes like the German Girocard work fine. But nationally.
Although, to be fair, there is Vero, the European Payments Initiative. Banks from several countries building a European payment system.
There is. And it's the right idea. but the rollout has been sluggish so far. And Vero is private money from commercial banks. That solves a different problem than the one we're about to discuss. Because now we're exactly where the digital euro enters the picture. Not as a gadget, as the answer to precisely this dependency question. Block 4. What the digital euro is and isn't.
Okay, let's clean this up. Because I think hardly any topic gets scrambled as badly as this one. Start from zero. What is the digital euro?
The digital euro is digital central bank money, issued by the ECB. The same currency as the bill in your pocket, just digital, for your phone. Not a new currency, not a cryptocurrency, not a coin that swings in value.
But I already have digital money in my bank account. I pay by card, by phone. What's the difference?
The difference is the counterparty. Your account balance is a claim against your bank, private money. If the bank fails, deposit insurance kicks in, with limits. The digital euro would be a claim against the central bank, like cash. A central bank cannot go bankrupt. Until now, central bank money for you and me exists in exactly one form: bills and coins. The digital euro would be the second form.
So at its core, cash for the digital age.
That's how the ECB pitches it. And structurally, that's accurate. Now, the state of play. And please listen closely here, because this is where most headlines get sloppy. There are two levels, the law and the currency. The law. On July 9th, the European Parliament adopted its negotiating mandate in plenary. The Council set its position back in December. Now comes the trilogue. Parliament, Council, and Commission negotiate the final text. The target is to finish by the end of 2026.
Which means nothing is actually decided yet.
Exactly. Anyone telling you the digital euro is a done deal hasn't understood the process. There's a negotiating mandate, not a regulation. And a second level, the currency. Even once the law passes, the ECB alone decides whether to issue. The timeline looks like this. Starting in the second half of 2027, a 12-month pilot with real transactions. They'll test person-to-person payments, NFC at the store, online payments. The pilot banks are being selected right now. And a possible first issuance in 2029 at the earliest.
So at least 3 more years. And now to the points where this debate reliably explodes. Surveillance, cash abolition, programmable money that expires. What's the truth there?
Let's go through them. Point 1. Surveillance. The draft regulation says the ECB will not see personal data on payments. The customer relationship runs through banks and payment providers like today. And the offline function is designed to be as private as cash. Device to device with no server watching.
Designed to be, that's future tense. And I'll tell you honestly where my remaining doubt sits. Not with today's version of the law. With the version after next. Infrastructure that exists can be repurposed. The limit being discussed at 3,000 euros today can sit somewhere else tomorrow. Today's anonymity can grow an exception for something the day after.
That's a legitimate objection, and it can't be argued away because it's about the future. What you can say, changes like that would require a full legislative process again, public, with parliament. That's a hurdle, not a guarantee. But now let me flip it, because you have to ask the same question about the status quo. Today, your payment data sits with private corporations, partly outside European jurisdiction. Which scenario is actually the bigger surveillance risk?
Touché. Although, with a private provider, at least I can switch.
Can you? To which non-US provider exactly for online payments? Point 2. Cash. The same legislative package contains a separate regulation explicitly protecting access to cash. The digital euro is built as a complement, not a replacement. Use is voluntary. And point 3, it is not programmable. It doesn't expire, it doesn't carry interest. A negative rate through the back door is ruled out in the draft. Which, by the way, is exactly why the holding limit exists.
The famous 3,000 euros. Explain that. Why a limit at all? At first glance, it looks like pure harassment.
It's actually banking statics. Imagine no limit. Then anyone could shift unlimited balances from their commercial bank into central bank money. In a banking crisis, that happens within hours. A digital bank run, by app. The deposits banks use to fund loans would be gone. So the limit doesn't protect the state from you. It protects the banking system from a design flaw. And important, the 3,000 is a discussion figure. The number is not decided. That's for the trilogue.
And now I get why you put Sweden at the start, the offline function.
That's where the circle closes. Parliament wants online and offline available from day one, not phased in later. Sweden learned the hard way what happens when a payment system knows only one mode. And Sweden is currently correcting its dependency on two private services, Bank ID and Swish. That is structurally the same argument the ECB makes for the digital euro, just one size bigger. Europe depends on private, non-European payment rails and is building itself a public fallback layer.
The digital euro as a failover system for an entire continent.
For the techies among our listeners, probably the most honest description there is.
Block 5, the SWIFT question.
Good. Then let me ask the big one. The question that kept me busy the most while preparing. Could a European player use the digital euro to build a globally significant digital currency infrastructure? Become a leading payment provider? At least as important as SWIFT?
And there it is, my trap from the beginning. Because there's a misconception inside that question, and it's worth unpacking. What do you think SWIFT actually does?
Settle international transfers?
That's exactly what it doesn't do. SWIFT doesn't move any money at all. SWIFT is a messaging network. It carries standardized messages between banks. Bank A tells Bank B, transfer amount X to account Y. The money itself flows elsewhere, through correspondent banks, through settlement systems. And now the punchline. Do you know where SWIFT is headquartered?
The US?
Belgium. La Hube, near Brussels. A cooperative owned by its member banks. Europe already has SWIFT. The thing you want to build has been sitting in Belgium since the 70s.
Okay, Trapsprung. But wait, if SWIFT is European, why are we even talking about dependency?
Because a dependency sits elsewhere. First, SWIFT may be Belgian, but in practice it's not sanction-proof. When Washington applies pressure, SWIFT cuts banks off. We've seen it repeatedly, from Iran to Russia. A messaging network is not a power vacuum. Second, and more important, the everyday dependency isn't at SWIFT at all. It's at the register and in the checkout. Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, Apple Pay, and increasingly dollar stablecoins. Isabel Schnabel of the ECB said it pretty bluntly in Seoul in June. Europe depends on foreign payment rails and dollar-denominated stablecoins. That is the front line this is about.
Then let me rephrase. Can the digital euro be the answer on that front line? Can something globally significant grow out of it?
Now it gets interesting. And the honest answer has three levels. Level 1. The digital euro for you and me. The retail euro. It is deliberately not built as a global product. Holding limit, focus on the euro area. Why? If anyone in the world could hold unlimited digital euros, you'd have two problems. Deposit flight out of European banks and currency substitution in third countries whose own currencies would erode. The ECB doesn't want that. Those countries don't want that. The retail euro is defense. Resilience and inclusion for the euro area, not an export hit.
So, no.
For level 1, no. But now level 2, and almost nobody knows this one. In parallel to the retail euro, the euro system is building infrastructure for the wholesale side, big ticket finance. two projects, Pontus and Appia. Pontus is the bridge between the new blockchain-based market platforms and the ECB's target systems. It lets tokenized securities settle in real central bank money, not in private IOs, not in stablecoins. The pilot launches in the third quarter of 2026, which is now. In the preparatory trials, around 1.6 billion euros were already settled with 64 market participants.
And Appia?
Appia is the long-term vision. A shared European ledger, programmable payments, securities, collateral, cross-border settlement. One platform, European governance, common standards. If there's a candidate for your European word infrastructure project anywhere, it's here. That wouldn't be SWIFT. That would be more than SWIFT. Messaging and settlement in one system, around the clock.
That sounds almost too good. Where's the catch?
Several. First, money. The ECB estimates the digital euro's cost at up to 5.8 billion. An industry-commissioned analysis puts it at 2 to 4 times that. The banks are grumbling because they're supposed to pay for something that competes with their deposits. Second, complexity. Industry associations argue a centralized Eurosystem architecture adds unnecessary complexity and squanders the technology's potential. Cipolloni at the ECB pushes back. Roughly, what's cheaper in the short run can get expensive if it leaves Europe open to blackmail later. And third, level 3, the most uncomfortable one.
Which is?
Whether a currency matters globally is not decided by technology. The dollar doesn't dominate because America has the best payment apps. It dominates because of the depth of US capital markets, because of the enormous market for US treasuries, where the world parks its reserves. Europe has no comparable common bond universe, 27 debtors instead of one. As long as that's true, even the best infrastructure won't make the euro the leading global currency. Technology can open doors, politics has to walk through them.
So if I put your three levels together, retail, deliberately small, wholesale, a serious shot at world class, reserve currency, depends on fiscal policy, not on code. And still a doubt remains. Europe is world class at announcing infrastructure projects. Gaia X says hello. Why would it work this time?
Fair point. I see three differences. First, there's an institution with real authority and its own budget. The ECB is not a consortium that dissolves into working groups. Second, there's outside pressure on the clock. Stablecoins are growing now. The Stripe paper a bit is happening now. Third, the first milestone isn't in some distant future. The Pontus pilot starts this quarter. Is that enough? I don't know, but it's a different setup than Gaia X.
One sentence for the show notes, please.
Europe isn't building the next PayPal. Europe is building the ground a European PayPal could actually stand on.
Block 6. Practice and outro.
Let's land this. Our listeners build websites, run shops, advise clients. What do they take away, concretely? I'll start. First, on the Stripe PayPal bit, stay calm. Don't migrate anything, don't cancel anything, but take an honest look at your own payment dependency. If your checkout has exactly one payment provider, you have the Sweden problem in miniature. One mode, no failover.
Second, watch the trilogue. The regulation is supposed to be finished by the end of the year. Then we'll know whether the 2029 timeline holds. For shop owners, that means the digital euro is not a topic for your next roadmap. But it is one for the roadmap after that. The regulation foresees an acceptance obligation for many merchants with carve-outs for the smallest. If you build checkout systems or shop software, keep it on your radar.
And third?
Third, keep an eye on Pontus and Appia, even if it sounds like banking backrooms. If tokenized settlement in central bank money becomes standard, new interfaces, new services, new business will grow around it. The interesting contracts usually appear one layer below the hype.
Then we've closed the circle. Sweden reinstates the fallback layer. Stripe wants to buy the customer interface. And Europe is trying to build its own layer underneath. One more thing, prediction. Does the digital euro arrive in 2029?
Predictions aren't my job. Context is. So here it is. The legislative train is moving. The mandate stands. The pilot has a date. The biggest risks are the trilogue and the cost fight with the banks. Let's put it this way. For the first time, the timeline is concrete enough to fail. That's more than you could say for the last 5 years.
That is the most diplomatic answer in podcast history. That was Sarah's Tech. If you enjoyed the episode, share it. All sources and links are in the show notes at markus.technology.
Thanks for listening, and remember the Swedish lesson. A system with only one mode isn't a system, says the AI voice of all people. See you next time.
Ciao.
Sarah's got a glow in her hands tonight. Golden circuits lighting up the fight. Fingers dancing on the keys so bright. Building worlds out of digital light. Binary beat pulse through her veins. Electric whispers driving through the rain. She's the spark in the wired domain. A tech queen breaking every chain. Solving riddles when the power goes out. Wired dreams, she's mapping the route. In the silence, hear her shout. She's a firewall to the world's decay. Turning glitches into a brighter day. Every bite she bends, every line she lays. Sarah's tech makes the chaos obey. Tech with Sarah, she's rewriting the sky. Algorithm soaring, we're learning to fly. She's the code breaker, the